right now. Eric Chella of the Toronto Titans, welcome once again. And Tyler Craig of the Toronto Junior Canadians. Guys, welcome aboard. Thanks for taking time out to come. But I've been bombarded with a ton of email, and I've expressed this to Peter Curtis, a lot of questions that a lot of parents have out there. And if you want to join the conversation out there, give me a call. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Guys, there's a lot that we got to cover, and I'm hoping some young coaches, some parents out there will join in on the conversation. But I want to talk about one thing, Eric, right off the bat that took place a few weeks back in the province of Manitoba, this disgusting event of hazing. And I don't know, Eric, how you go about dealing with this, and you, Tyler, but especially at the ages of, let's say, 13 to 17, this is an issue, guys, that I think is very important to discuss with these guys. Look, we're about all the same age here. And when we were growing up playing whatever sport it might be, sure, we horsed around, maybe in the dressing room or on the field, maybe with some shaving cream or a wedgie, guys, as they used to say. But some of the stuff today, guys, that's happening is unacceptable, disgusting, what allegedly took place, and is unacceptable. Do you, Eric, right away at the beginning of the season, make it known to the players, parents and players, look, there's no room for this?
Well, 100%. The problem is with us, the guys are younger. So you're looking probably the minor midget level with Tyler's guys there that may experience this. But generally in the GTHL with the hazing, we haven't experienced it. But you set the discipline right at the beginning of the season and move from there. But what's happened in Manitoba is something that hopefully we never have to experience, and we have never experienced so far. And hopefully by having those meetings beginning of the year, you just prevent it.
Now, Eric, you say having those meetings, you're having meetings with your coaches and you're outlining that this is unacceptable and there's no place for it, correct?
Oh, that's correct. But that's also the GTHL also has, you know, we're required to take a D1 course and speak out courses and make sure we treat our kids properly. They're also looking at putting respect and support for the parents. There's a lot of stuff that's going on in the GTHL that, you know, we're leaders in, I think, in minor sport with regards to some of the things that our coaches have to do. So we don't tolerate it at all. I don't think it's going to happen just because of what we've done.
Well said, Eric. Tyler, let's talk about this. You coach some young players that are a delicate age, guys that are impressionable, guys that get, unfortunately, taken down the wrong path by some players or some teammates that, you know, have a bigger pull on the team. How do you go about handling this?
Well, like Eric said, there is those situations where you're going to have to step in as a coach and as a president of the organization and have to go through very detailed with your players. This is the expectations, especially, like Eric mentioned, at the 15 to 17, but even higher. Coach Junior A, it's definitely much more relevant there. I think the one positive that we take out of that situation that happened in Manitoba is it does bring awareness. It didn't just get pushed aside. It's a big deal. And I think when you look at that at the GTHL level, although we haven't had that, thankfully, knock on wood, at the minor hockey level, it is going to come. Kids are older these days. It seems like a 15 is used to be like a 7-year-old. And you do see that. And there is more pressure for these kids, especially at midget. I know our midget coach spent a lot of time talking to players about expectations and rookies. And I think the worst I've heard so far is, you know, a player may be wearing a dress or something at this point, and that's something you address and you say, guys, look, at you can't do that sort of stuff. There hasn't been anything beyond that, thankfully. But this, like we said, this is GTHL is mandatory. Every coach must take this abuse and harassment course. So we all are aware of these sort of things.
Tyler, I tell you, as a parent of two boys, I'm glad that you mentioned that it's come to the forefront, Eric, and it's been spotlighted, because this to me is an important issue. We talk about concussions coming to the forefront, and it's a big issue. I think this is a serious issue and a big issue, and I'm glad it's been brought out, because I got to tell you, again, listening to what took place there out in Manitoba, if it is true, is disgusting, unacceptable, and we can't have this, because you and I both know, Eric and Tyler, that at that age, it's so delicate, it's so important that the young man or the young girl understands right from wrong. And they look at you, Eric, they look at you, Tyler, as people, leaders, people that can help them. Again, Eric, I want to stress upon how important it is also to communicate to the parents that this is unacceptable in your organization. Do you go about doing that with them as well?
Well, yes, we do. We've actually initiated a respect and support program voluntary this year. The GTHL is looking at putting as part of a program that if you don't take this respect and support program as a parent, your kid won't be able to play until you do take this course. So The Titans have done it on a voluntary basis this year as a test program. But we want to attract good families, good people to the organization, and we want them to stay. And there's no place for it in hockey or any sport.
Well said, Eric Chella of the Toronto Titans, Tyler Crank of the Toronto Junior Canadiens. Guys that care, guys that are passionate about what they do. And if you want to join in on the conversation, you're free to give us a call at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Tyler, the next question is to you, and I'm really getting concerned about this as a parent, again, of two boys, but a parent that I thought I'd never see the day where a mom and dad couldn't afford to put their little Johnny or little Susie in a game of rep hockey, single A, double A, triple A, you name it. The costs are rising, Tyler. How do we go about, you know, taking care of this big problem? I mean, let's also talk about what a big effect the HST has had on the rising costs of these young men, these young women, to play the game they love.
Yeah, well, you look at it from talking first about HST, and I mean, that's on everything that they buy. It's on a stick. It's on tape. It's on ice time. And that's a big one. Most teams buy ice, so they're in for another $12,000, $13,000 of additional ice a year. So 8% is a big deal. You start adding it, it's on your pants, it's on your gloves. 8% is on everything they do. And that's the organization. Same thing when they book ice. So all that's obviously passed on again. And so 8% is 8%. There's no hiding from that. There's no rebates on that. You got to pay it, and it's a big deal. And when you're talking about, you know, whether the average AAA now is around $5,000 to play.
Wow.
And at 8%, you know, there's $400. So it's all adding up. And when we talk about rising costs to address that concern, more and more now, you're seeing more and more teams being proactive in sponsorship. Back when it was 2000, I don't want to sponsor. I don't want to fundraise. Here's a check. Just leave me alone. Now everyone suddenly, what are we doing? And it used to be one, and now you're seeing two, three, four. You know, you're buying your meats from somebody. You know, you're getting hit up all the time.
I'm glad you brought that up, Tyler. You can finish off, but Eric, you can respond to this as well. Now we're finding out where managers of the teams will go up with a book of tickets and say, look, if you can sell them, great, you get your money back. But if you can't, you've got to fork over the money for the tickets. I don't like that, Eric and Tyler. I think that's not right. You can't put the gun to the parent, the mom and dads that are trying to put food on the table and say, look, if you can't sell those, well, too bad. You're going to have to absorb that, Tyler. That's not right.
No, it's tough. And I think we're trying to be more and more creative in how we do it. And I know just coming up in 3 weeks at my team that I coach, a minor midget team, we're doing a bowling night. And for us, it's an easy, it's fun. Everyone just grabs some food and some friends, and we sell tickets to this sort of thing, maybe a signed auction item or something. And a little bit of work, and you can generate $8,000-$9,000. And, you know, that's $600-$700 a parent. It's a big deal. And when if you do three or four events similar to this, whether it's a golfing or what have you, the younger teams often, you'll see the kids standing outside of the LCBO or what. I sort of like that one because when they're really little, it sort of does teach them the responsibility. Hey, hockey costs money. I'm going to help out and, you know, spend my 3 hours in front of the LCBO or whatever. And so I think these are what parents are doing now. And you're seeing more and more parents jumping in saying, yeah, let's do it, because it's becoming for the rich now. And we can't have that. Obviously, we're turning away too many good players if we make it like that.
Well said, Tyler. Eric, let's talk about today. In today's world, the economy has taken a hit all over North America, all over the world. There was times that people could go up to the car dealership or they could go up to whatever big department store there might be and say, look, can you help out? Can you give us something to give back to the club in your community? Today, you go knocking on those doors and those people are hurting just as much as everyone else. So it's hard all around. What can be done to fix this problem of rising costs?
Well, I look at it a different way. We practice probably once a week. If we practice twice a week, we have 26 weeks of practice. That's 52 practices. You have about 50 games, so you have 100. It's essentially costing you $50 for a practice or a game. So, you know, at a average cost of $5,000, I don't think it's that expensive. If you go skiing, you rent your skis, you go for a day, you and your family's going to cost you $200-$400 by the time you get out there. Go to the movies, you take your family. Last time I took my family to movies, it cost me $150 by the time I bought popcorn and that. You know what, with the cars expensive, yeah, it's expensive when you total it all up, but when you put it at a per visit, it really isn't that bad.
But you know, my concern is, Eric, sort of stop you there. It's the newcomer to Ontario. It's the new family that's never played the game of hockey. I'm thinking of the new immigrants, and they've never played, and they want to play, but they can't afford to play. Then, you know those kids, we're going to miss out. The hockey market, the GTHL, all the hockey market, Tyler and Eric, are going to miss out. You want to capitalize on them to make it affordable, to make it enjoyable, because, hey, Toronto's changing. Ontario's changing. The multiculturalism is changing in a big way. And I don't have to tell you two guys that hockey registration has gone down and soccer has taken over in the last number of years.
Yeah, but the, you know, House League doesn't cost that much. House League is $400. There's a lot of programs out there helping for with equipment. A lot of our leagues, a lot of our associations will donate equipment to the less privileged, the underprivileged. So I really think it's all relative when it comes to expenses. I don't think hockey is any worse than anything else, any other pastime, quite frankly.
Well, at least at the elite level, right? Like if you're talking about elite sports and we're talking AAA here right at this moment, but we're all levels, and the number I gave, 5,000, I was referring to AAA. And I think if your son is, for example, I run a facility that has figure skating. And so, I mean, 5,000 is, they wish it was 5,000. And, you know, then that's, they're probably more like 10, 12 the time it's all said and done.
Wow.
So it's all relative in terms of what you're comparing it to in terms of an elite sport. You know, if you're a speed skater, you have to go specific places, you have to train, you're a lot of touring, a lot of travel. So 5,000, it's not cheap, but that's AAA only. And then like Eric said, House League at $400, and there is a lot of equipment that you can get and donate. I think we're still we're doing a fairly good job of keeping the door open to new Canadians to come out and do the Learn to Skate. And there's so many good community programs where you can learn to skate for next to nothing. And there is that option. So I think you have to keep on in comparison. What are you offering and who's it for?
And let's be also honest, Tyler and Eric, the hockey parents dish out a lot of money, and a lot of these rinks you guys go and play at are in bad shape. I've been to a lot of rinks in the city that are absolutely I would never let my kids go in some of these dress rooms again. I don't have to mention names, and we don't have to mention names of some of the rinks around there. But some of the rinks around there are in horrible shape, and people are still paying to get in, Eric and Tyler. They're paying all sorts, and they're not upgrading their facility, but parents keep paying, Eric.
Well, there are a few that aren't in good shape, granted, but there's a whole bunch that are in great shape. You know, Tyler's facility is an awesome facility. You look around at Westwood, Chesswood, our home rink at Chesswood's not a pro. We both play out of Chesswood. I think it's a great rink. It's old, but you know what? It's in good shape. Our city rinks, they're small, but they're effective. I don't know. I really think, yeah, there's probably a couple, but how many soccer fields out there that are a disaster? You know,
Eric, don't get me started there.
So I think, you know, when it comes to expense and everything, can there be improvement? 100% there can be improvement in everything, but I think it's all relative to what you're doing. If it's something that's a passion for your kid, you know what? It's better than sitting home. Like we had a couple nights off this week, and the kids are going stir crazy in the house. So I have no problem spending that $5,000 or whatever it is to get them out of the house and so they don't drive me crazy.
I appreciate that, Eric. Tyler, let's talk about, I love the passion and the positiveness that Eric is coming across with. Is there change taking place in a lot of aspects of the game? Of hockey, not just in the cost, but in many other aspects. Do you see finally a change for the better at the grassroots level?
At the grassroots level, yes. I think at the minor hockey level, there is positive changes. I think one thing you're seeing more of, and there is pros and cons of this, but you're seeing more people when they're done playing hockey now coaching. And I remember when I was done playing hockey, and I was 25, and it's like, okay, I wanted to. You know, after I get a real job, then I want to sort of coach as well. And and so I got into coaching and I did it for free for many, many years. And it's a passion. But what happens, I had a lot of friends that did the same thing and they volunteered their time. And what happened is it's not easy sometimes being a AAA or AA or A minor hockey coach in Toronto or wherever, anything really in Canada. And you do take some grief and you're sort of at the end, they're sort of going, why am I doing this? And I had so many good friends who started and after a year or two, they were gone. And now what's happening is there's a trend and there is pros and cons of this trend, but there is a trend where now parents are sort of saying, hey, let's give a few bucks back. And that's sort of keeping some of them in the game a little longer.
Well said, Tyler Craig of the Toronto Junior Canadiens, Eric Chella of the Toronto Titans. We're talking grassroots hockey, GTHL style. The phone lines are open. We're taking your calls and coming back, guys. I want to address dress attire. Some of these young men are going to these games in three-piece suits, ties, shirts, and I think that is just way out there, and I think that has to change, and let's hope it does change. Chris, we'll take your call coming back after the break, and there's phone lines are open, and we're going to be addressing a lot of topics throughout the hour: dress attire, rules, coaches, referees, Join in at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Anthony Totaro in the house in the great city of Toronto, in the great province of Ontario, the hockey mecca, the greatest province, the greatest city to let your kids go out and play the great game of hockey. And here we are talking GTHL hockey with Eric Chella of the Toronto Titans and Tyler Crank of the Toronto Junior Canadiens. Guys, welcome back. And the phone lines are open. You want to join in on the conversation, feel free to give us a call at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Tyler, before we left off, Eric, before we left off, and we'll get to the caller right after this, but I want to address dress attire, Eric. I find it quite upsetting, quite comical, Tyler, that these young men at the earliest ages, I don't know, let's say 8 or 9, have to come in a tie, white shirt, and pants, good slacks, to a hockey game. Coaches, please, can you stop it? Let them come in tracksuits, Eric, Tyler. They're playing hockey. Let them come in a team logo top. Why are we making this such a, almost like an Army, Navy, regiment type of a style? It's a game, Eric. Am I not right?
You know, I agree, but you have to leave that up to the coach. I think it's all a matter of setting discipline and putting some rules down. Maybe there's too many rules, whatever, but it's nice to look as a team. Now, having said that, you know, I to your point, you don't see these guys coming in. They're rushing from their school to the rink, and they have to be concerned about putting a tie on. We leave it to our coaches. But generally, our older guys, our minor midget guys, they're ready for their draft year. Sometimes the bantams, you know, they have to dress suitably because they're maybe talking to scouts or whatever. But the younger guys, we tell them to dress like they would go to school and wear something tight. And that's really about it. So in our association, we don't really have an issue with the dress code. We just want them to look presentable and wear something
good for you.
Wear something tight.
Good for you, Eric. And that's the way it should be, Tyler. I don't know how your club feels about this, but I got to tell you, Tyler, again, I don't like seeing these kids almost treated like robots. You got to wear the tie. You got to wear the white shirt. You got to wear the slacks. And if you don't, guess what? You won't be playing tonight, or you'll be benched. Or are you kidding me, coaches? Wake up out there. We're talking 8, 9, 10-year-olds. Maybe, Eric, I agree with you, and Tyler, you can talk about this. I would say, you know what, 14 and up, OHL level, you know, your level, AAA. Yeah, that's not a problem. I have no problem with that because, you know what, the young man is growing up. You got to show some respect, and you've got to dress properly. No problem. But, Tyler, 8, 9, 10?
Yeah, well, it's so funny because now they actually, I don't know, it's changed now. The parents actually drive right up to the front door. They hit a button, and they're up comes the trunk automatically, and then the kids go out, grab the equipment, and run in the door. They're literally in the dressing room in about 2 minutes. So who's seen him in this suit anyway that they have to dress up in? Agreed, minor midget, 15 and up. Minor midget, you know, there's scouts, agents, et cetera. You want to present yourself. The team that I coach, the kids say, well, what's the dress code? I said, well, we're going to go in our track suits for the first month while it's warm because otherwise we never get to wear them. And then we'll go ahead and go with the suit and tie And the suit isn't even a suit because you're wearing the winter jacket over top anyway. So really, it's just a shirt and tie. And the kids were sort of, well, what color do I wear? Well, you go ahead and express yourself. You want to wear a Winnie the Pooh tie, you wear it. You know, it's your call on that. And so, you know, first day I came in and they were wearing shirts and ties, all of them at a tournament in London. And they were all wearing, like, most of them were wearing pink. And they thought that was pretty funny, I guess.
Good for you,
Tyler. I don't know
what
it was about, but it was an inside thing. And I just pretend I didn't notice, I guess.
Well said, Tyler. Guys, let's get to the callers. And Chris from Toronto, welcome to Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, Chris.
First of all, I just wanted to appreciate your research, having two pillars of the GE community with Eric and Tyler from the JRC and the Titans on tonight. But I was going to talk about something else, but you threw me for a loop with the shirt and tie. It's part of the game, especially at the AAA level. It's respect for the game. It's respect for the team. It's respect for the jersey that they wear. And it's discipline. There's warm-up suits and there's shirt and tie. And I think it's a great part of the game. And it makes my 10-year-old feel that he is a part of the game.
And I agree with that, Chris. And stay on the line. And Tyler, Eric, you can comment on this. If it makes him feel, Chris, as you're saying, important or that it's he feels that this
but you have to understand, it instills a part of the game of hockey in the OMHA, in the Alliance, in the GTHL. It's part of the game. You might think it, you yourself might think it's crazy to see a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old. It's part of our community, the hockey community.
But you say it's part of the game, Chris. Do you think if we go to Russia, if we go to Finland or Sweden, that this is part of their game?
When the Europeans come here, they're dressed in shirt and tie when they come to our tournaments. Part of the game. You have to understand, it's part of the minor hockey. It's part of it. I was going to talk about something totally different, but you threw me for a loop, and it kind of pissed me off.
That's what we love having, guys that care.
Listen, but my kid picks out his tie for his team. You have to understand that.
No, but I understand. But Chris, maybe some other kid from another parent doesn't want to wear that tie.
Yeah, but Anthony,
well,
Anthony,
if you don't want to wear that, then you're not going to be on the team. That's part.
Well, then
the
that. So if the kid's got a lot of talent, Chris, I'll let you stay on the line and finish.
It's not a talent thing. It's we have the meaning at the beginning of the year, and as you talk about what the dress code is going to be, have a general meeting, and if it's 70-30, then the 30%, too bad for you. We're all wearing shirt and ties, or we're wearing warm-up suits. But you have to understand, it's part of our game.
Well, I appreciate your call, Chris, from Toronto, but in my opinion, for my 2 cents worth, it's not part of the game, Tyler and Eric. He might think it is, but look, you can't tell me that this is part of the game. Sure, it teaches respect, it's discipline, all that. I agree with that, Eric. But what I don't like is that, and I've heard this, some coaches have told me, look, if the kid doesn't come in the way I've told him to come in the shirt and tie, he's not playing the amount of minutes that he would regularly get just for not coming like that. That's not right, Eric.
Well, it's a matter of setting discipline. I agree with Chris to a point, but it's discipline is very, very important. If a kid doesn't listen to certain rules and follow certain rules, you're not going to be able to teach him. Whether it's a tie, I'm a guy that wore a tie for 5 years going to St. Mike's, and I was glad to get rid of it. But you know what? I want them to wear their warm-up suit. I want, if they're warming up, I would like them to see them look all the same. I like having some type of uniform. Does it have to be a suit and tie? Not necessarily. But yeah, just set discipline on your team, and that's very important. Even with the coaches, you don't want them sitting there with the ball cap turned backwards, jeans with holes in them. They should dress appropriately as well.
There, I agree 100%. You know what comes to mind, Eric, right away, Tyler. You might remember him as well. Is Tommy McVie? You remember Tommy McVie? He coached the Winnipeg Jets. The way he used to come behind the bench. Do you remember him, Eric?
No.
He'd come in a tracksuit, if I'm not mistaken, or sometimes in just a turtleneck. And that, I had a problem with that, because here you are, the coach, and you're coming like that. Yeah. Where, Tyler, again, I have no problem if certain teams want to do that, but I would rather give them the option if they want to or they don't.
Yeah, like Chris said, if the team is voting on it, fine. I mean, I've coached all ages, and I've had teams wear shirt and ties, and for the most they tend to be more at the older age when the kids want to do that anyway. I mean, if his 10-year-old team wants to do that, then all the power to him. I think the one cool thing that does sort of set the tone, whether you're putting on your shirt and tie or whatever, you do sort of start getting in the frame of mind, I'm going to a game, I got to start getting ready to play and perform, and you start getting the right maybe mindset, and maybe that for that team, that's what it is, and that's not a bad thing at all. Whatever that is, whether it's a shirt and tie or a tracksuit, it's fine.
Guys, let's talk about rules. That's the next thing that's hot and heavy that a lot of parents have expressed to me that they wanted to let me bring out to the discussion table with yourself, Tyler, and you, Eric. I think there's too many strict rules, and we touched upon a little bit about here about the dress attire. But let's talk about, as an example, a player comes late to a practice, maybe once this week and maybe 3-4 weeks down the line late again. Mom and dad are working. They're trying their best to get the kid there on time. They're trying safely to get them there. Sometimes it happens that they're late. I've seen it with my own eyes with my two boys. I've heard it where, unfortunately, Eric, the child has to suffer and pay the consequences because maybe mom and dad are having to stay at work a little bit later, and they get a little bit late, and then you get this coach that thinks he's all that and more and has to prove a point. You're late. You're not playing all the time tonight. Eric?
Well, I never, ever condone penalizing a kid because he doesn't drive. And
good point.
I agree with that. But once again, coming down to the rules, if a parent calls, says, I'm running late, we all have cell phones, we all have texts, we all have emails. Whatever it is, if the rule is to be out an hour before the game and it's a Friday night, starts raining, and they're not going to be there, simple phone call, just so the coach knows that whether he's going to be in the lineup or not, you're preparing for a game. There's a lot involved when you get ready. So there's certain things that the coaches want done, and you know, time is important. So it's just a respect thing, just like work.
It's a great point you bring up, Eric, and I appreciate that point. Tyler, what if I text you, my son is going to be late because I'm running behind, or I call you?
Mm-hmm.
Are you still going to be honest? Are you still going to take time away from him?
No. I think we just, and we went through this probably starting about 3-5 years ago, and just everyone's work. I mean, now we're at the era of both parents are working. Everyone's busy. Hockey practices, because we're trying to save money, start earlier, you know, because the ice is cheaper at 5 versus 7. And so it's hard to make it work. And with our coaches in our meeting not too long ago, you know, we sat down and said, look, don't paint yourself in a corner. Don't say if you're late one time, this will happen. If you are sick too many times, this will happen. If this, you know, like just play it by ear. If someone's always late, then okay, there's going to be a problem. But these kids want to be there. So
Absolutely. They you know, they'll run every red light if they have to make it on time to the game, Eric and Tyler. Let's get back to the callers. And Scott from Cambridge, welcome to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Your question for these two gentlemen.
Well, first, my comment on the shirt and tie thing. I think it does give the kids the opportunity to start to get into the mindset of the game. I think once they're in that suit and they're getting their gear together and everything else, the mindset starts to roll. And I think it's an important part of the game. So, you know, dress code, I think when they're younger, 10, 11 years old, I think track suits are fine. But once they get into that Pee Wee age group, I think that they can start to wear a shirt and tie. My question is, I guess for both of you, what are your thoughts with respect to the new rules and regulations with regards to kids freer movement, and how I'm not sure if it affects so much in the GTHL. I know in the Cambridge area it does affect us a little bit more, but in the GTHL, how do you guys find that? Is that working or is it not working, or do you think they need to expand that?
Scott, appreciate your call from Cambridge. Eric, address Scott's concern.
Well, we're only allowed 5 what they're called imports. I'm all for freedom of movement. You know, if you want to play, if you want to live in Cambridge or Barrie and work in Toronto, you're allowed to do that. The girls' hockey, they have no borders. So I have no problem with the open borders. We got rid of the GTHL got rid of the lifetime card, the minor bantam, and it really hasn't caused anything. If people want to move, they move. It's really not an issue. So I think it's good to have the open borders, and it comes down to the coaches. If your coaches are good, your organization's good, people are going to stay. You don't have to worry about locking them in. And so I have no problem with the open borders. I hopefully we can get rid of this import rule and let people play where they want to play.
Tyler, you want to address Scott's concern from Cambridge?
No, Scott makes a great point. Scott's from Cambridge, and so Scott's son must play for Cambridge. He doesn't have the option to go somewhere else, and I assume I'm right with that, Scott. But the point is, if he'd say his son is the goalie and the coach's son is the goalie or whatever the case is, who knows how that ice time will be dulled out. It's not always fair. I'm not knocking minor OMHA hockey or Alliance hockey. I think they're outstanding. I believe in hometown hockey. But sometimes people get stuck in tough situations, and sometimes it's very legit situations. And to have the opportunity to maybe drive 20 minutes down the road or 10 minutes down the road to Waterloo, where maybe it's a better situation. And I think that would put emphasis on Kitchener, Waterloo, Cambridge, whoever, to provide a really strong coach and a great program. And if they're running a great program, people want to stay and people want to come into that program. And I think that concept of running, it puts the pressure on us as organizations. Make sure you have a good program. Make sure you're offering video. Make sure you're doing dry land. Make sure you're doing extra ice time. Make sure you have quality coaches that are good people. And I think, you know, Scott's point about, you know, movement is an important one that, you know, quite frankly, the GTHL has voted to have this done all the time. And ironically, the Alliance, where he's calling from, always kills it. And because they feel like maybe the kids will drive an hour and a half into Toronto or what have you. But they won't. I mean, who wants to get in the car and drive an hour and a half? They would like a great program where they live. And I think some of these old school organizations, I'm not saying Cambridge are a good one, but they will for sure bring better programs together for that.
That was a great call from Scott from Cambridge. This is the reason why, guys, I have you on here, and I'm going to have you on continuously, and I have other coaches on here. It's a question like that. I'm here to help out, to listen, to learn, and to help out the young coaches, the young parents out there, because there are concerns. And You guys are giving back so much to the community. You want to help out. And there's so many other great coaches and parents that want to help out and give. And so that's why when I have these conversations, these roundtables on grassroots hockey, we want to help. We want to get the positiveness out there, but we also want to learn from some of the things that haven't been done right in the past. Phone lines are open. We're talking grassroots hockey, GTHL style, with two of the best. Two guys that really give back to their community and care here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. With two of the best in the business, Tyler Craig of the Toronto Junior Canadiens and Eric Chella of the Toronto Titans. And I got to give a lot of thanks also to Peter Curtis, a guy that's on top of it all. And Peter, thanks for all your help and support. But when I have these talks, guys, as we said during the breaks, it's really to help out the coaches, the parents, people like you. It's an information session that I like to help out people out there. And as I said, we're going to continuously do it all as long as I'm on there to help out, because I know that there's a big demand out there. The parents, coaches want to talk about a lot of issues. And let's talk about, Tyler, coaches and the respect that they're not giving a lot of times to referees. Look, these referees, I've witnessed it with my own eyes in hockey, in soccer, you name it, especially at the young ages, Tyler. They are sometimes berated, yelled at, like you've never seen or experienced. Maybe you have, but I have. And I got to tell you, I tell my two boys, don't ever get into reffing at any sport, because it might be rewarding and it might be great to make some extra cash, but the abuse they take is unacceptable. What are you telling some of your coaches that are starting out at the young ages about referees and respecting them?
Well, you make a good point about the refereeing. I don't know why anyone refs. I mean, I don't know how much they make. It's not a lot. And the abuse that they take from coaches or maybe upbeat mums, let's say, or whoever is sort of yelling at them. And it's like you're sort of wondering why they do it. And I know in the GTHL, they have had a harder time over a period, because it is such a large league, finding officials. But they have done a great job. Actually, there's the Meet a Ref program, and you have questions for referees, and you can talk to refs before and after a game. They have that, something that's actually just happening this weekend with officials, especially with the younger ages, minor Adam. So to sort of humanize these referees, that they are people and they do make mistakes. And as a, you know, with the coaches, you're always trying to encourage them. Look at it. You're not going to agree with everything. It's just, no matter what you yell, it isn't going to change. No matter what you say.
It's a great point, Tyler. It's a great point. Eric, you know what? He makes a great point. These are human beings. These are people like you and I. They've got jobs. Maybe they're going to university, you name it. Look, I've been known on the sidelines on the soccer field, Eric. I won't lie to you. I've let the refs have it. And we'll talk about that in the next segment. But, you know, we've got to give the refs more respect.
I think we do. It's just like a coach. I think, you know, why do people coach? Because you have parents that drive you crazy. but it's very few. And, you know, we've done a lot with the Titans and Ice Dogs, the two organizations I run. We had a meeting at the beginning of the season with Steve Wallace, and all our coaches went through that on top of what the GTHL has done. I think we've got the best refing in anywhere. You know, you go to OMHA, the Alliance, no offense to them, but I think our refing, with the amount of work that Peter Curtis and Chris Whiting have done in the league office, we've got great refs. Just today in my game, 2000 game, they missed a call. I thought they missed a call. I got a little upset. You know, we talked about it back and forth, and it was a very respectful dialogue back and forth. And I think it's all a matter of communication. You know, we've Peter Curtis and my group will be meeting in December. We meet once a year. And we just kind of do a similar round table and talk about how we can improve the game, the communication. And there's a lot of good things coming out of it. So I think reffing is a great job. They get paid good money. And yeah, you know what? They take abuse, but so do coaches. And I think it's a mutual respect. And I think it's getting a lot better. And a few spoil it for the rest.
You mentioned the word twice, communication. And the phone lines are open if you want to join in on the conversation and talk to these gentlemen here, and you have anything on your mind, GTHL hockey or even OMHA, whatever the hockey might be, you have a concern or a question, feel free to give us a call at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Eric, you mentioned communication, and that is so key. That is so important. And now we're going to go to the refereeing aspect. And look, without referees, there's no games, Tyler. Let's be honest and upfront about that. But I got to be honest, the referees as well need to up their game a bit. And they need to get to that level where coaches aren't going to lose it by them blowing a call, or coaches are not going to miss out in getting into that final because a call was blown. I know for a fact there is guys out there refereeing games consistently and making this almost a full-time career. And do you not think, Eric and Tyler, that there comes a point, too, that the referee has to raise their game and raise the bar and not be reffing, you know, 3-4 games today and 3-4 games tomorrow, because they're going to get tired and miss some calls, Tyler?
Yeah, well, you see that a lot at the older age group because of the tempo of the speed, where it's going back and forth, and it's hard to keep up with these young 14, 15-year-old kids. I always laugh at these sort of adult hockey refs that try and do both. And in adult hockey, because the refs obviously do minor hockey and they do adult hockey, and they barely move in adult hockey. Then in minor hockey, you see them chugging along trying to get to the blue line, and sometimes bad habits do cross over. But I think a ref, when you talk about communication, you know, it's unbelievable what a little communication will do. And when you just slide by a bench, say, hey, coach, you know, whatever he was complaining about, you sort of have a little chat about that. Real brief, 2 seconds, keep moving. Again, you humanize yourself as a referee. You know, nobody wants to rip on another guy too hard. So you sort of humanize, you talk about it. Yeah, maybe if I did miss it, I'm sorry about that. Then it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm done arguing because you just said, you know, like, you can calm things down real fast. If you hide or you stay on the other side of the rink, I always laugh when I see a ref, he makes a couple of calls. He maybe knows maybe it wasn't the best call. And all of a sudden he decides he's going to stay on the other side of the arena from where the benches are, you know. And then all of a sudden he makes one for you and then he's back on your side again.
That's well said, Tyler. But you know what, Eric, as well, why not, before the game even starts, and I've said this to a lot of referees in soccer and hockey, why not before the game starts, go over, shake the guy's hands, each coach's. Just introduce yourself, coach, have a good game, my name is such and such, I'll do the best I can, you do the best you can, and right there you break the ice. I find today in many sports, the referees, guys, come with a swagger, with an attitude before the puck is dropped or before the ball is being kicked or the baseball, the umpire. They come with a swagger, Eric. They come with an attitude that, hey, it's my way or the highway. It's my call. You don't like it too bad. I think that is so wrong, Eric.
Well, Anthony, I think, first off, we introduce ourselves. They come to the bench, and we say hello every time. I think it comes down to experience. And we expect the refs to be perfect right out of the gate. And if you go watch a minor midget game, you'll see some of the best reffing around. There's great communication. And as you go to the younger age groups, you know, is it great? No. Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it is. But I think just like a little 10-year-old hockey player, we expect him to be able to deke and shoot and skate and pass and look.
But the difference there, Eric, sorry to interrupt, the difference is there. You said it yourself. They're getting paid good money, Tyler.
Yeah,
so they got to step up to the plate.
Well,
they're getting paid.
But they're doing their clinics. They do a lot of work. And you know, I've been known to kind of rip a ref as well, and I think we've all been there.
Right.
But you know, have you ever reffed a game, Anthony? I reffed a house league game, and my goodness, I didn't know how fast that game was until I reffed that game, and it was, I think we had, I was doing Pee Wee at the time, and it was my first game reffing, and after the game I was told how brutal I was, and I thought I did a good job, but I understand, you know, you don't really understand how many things are happening. There's so many things that are happening that, you know, we have to support them. They have to understand. I think positive feedback, what we do is, I've asked my coaches and I've asked Chris Whiting and Peter Curtis for the refs to give a report on my coaching staff. And we give a report back to them, positive and constructive.
And I like that. I like that a lot.
To make sure, hey, listen, this guy did a great job. Like the two guys that ref my game today, they did an awesome job. They did 3 games. I coached 2 of those 3 games. They did an awesome job. And Peter Curtis and Chris Whiting will know about it on Monday morning.
And Tyler, that's where I agree. If a ref has refed a good game, and I've done this in the past when I've coached in a game of soccer and when we won or lost, and if I feel that ref has done a good game, hey, don't blame the ref for the result. And that's where I have no problem. What I have a problem is, again, is we have to understand that these referees are getting paid. And I'm not expecting them to have a fantastic game each and every time they're out there, Tyler, but they are getting paid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are getting paid. So you do at least you want effort. I mean, I don't know how many calls you agree with as a coach when it goes against you, but you at least can buy the fact that if he's skating hard, he's on the line, he's at the goal. If the puck's going in, he can see it if it's in or not. As long as you're skating hard and they're into it and they're communicating, you can live with the mistakes. As long as there's not a million of them, I mean, you can live with the little mistakes, and because they're not going to be perfect. They're human beings.
But you mentioned, Tyler, that you're hoping they're skating and they're hustling. I've seen a lot of guys, I'll be honest, out there reffing games that, boy, I'm not saying I'm the slimmest and trimmest guy in here, but some of those guys are carrying a six-pack. And what are they doing out there in the first place? If we're showing the kids in this province, in this city, and in this country that they need to be in tip-top shape, not just for hockey, but for life.
Well, we need refs, though, Anthony. And you know what? All the credit to them. They take the time. You know, they're making good money. They're making $25-30 a game to get yelled at and abused. So, and they're driving out there. I don't have a problem with the refs. I think it's just a matter of there's room for improvement in coaching, in playing, in
Absolutely.
Parents and everything. And I think that's the focus. The focus is how we can make it better. If the refs aren't there, we don't have a hockey game.
I agree. But what I'm saying, Eric, and Tyler, I'll go to you, is look, if we're asking you, Eric, and you, Tyler, and all the coaches out there that they need to get better, that they need to improve and go to clinics and up their game continuously, unless they're not going to attract the better players, then why, Tyler, are we not asking the referees to bring their game up a notch? And even if they are going to clinics, what if they're not grasping it and getting better after these clinics? When do we cut it? And I understand that we need refs, but we need quality refs as well.
And I won't speak on behalf of Peter Kurz, but over the years, 15 years of coaching and running an organization, you do have other coaches and myself, we sort of see some refs that don't meet the standards. And I think when you do go to the GTHL and you sort of make a comment, they're very quick to say, yep, and they register it. And then often they do have tons of officials that go out, senior officials that go out and they grade these refs, and all the refs are graded. And because there is so many, they do have to keep track of them. They do have to have people going out and grading them. It's very, very common to see up in the stands, there's a gentleman with is making notes on the game, then after the game coming down, talking with the refs. And they'll see it. And if you have a couple of complaints, I mean, you don't want to be one of those organizations to complain every game, obviously, but if every once in a blue moon you send one in, you do get a quick response. They do care. I think one thing I was really impressed with when I was talking with them one time about an official is they care more often about the attitude of the official. If he's got like sort of a snide remark, or he's right off, that you're talking about that. Well, it's my world. You're just lucky to be here, sort of thing.
And that's my concern, Tyler.
It's mainly the young guys, though, Anthony. It's the younger guys, the cocky guys. Just they get a little cocky. They don't show respect for the coaching staff. You know, some of the older officials, and there's guys out there that you just can't wait to have a game ref by them because they're awesome. And there's other guys that they need an attitude check. And I'm a 40-ish old guy, and when a 19-year-old kid tries to come out and tells me, be a smart ass with me, pardon my expression, that's when I have a problem. And that's where Peter Kurz and Chris Whiting get in.
And that's where the poison, that's where the hot blood goes, Tyler, is in those situations where Eric said, look, you're getting a young guy with an attitude and a cockiness about him coming up telling the coach that's coached a lot longer than he's ref, and he's coming around with a swagger. That really bothers me and that concerns me. And look, I am grateful for referees. Don't get me wrong. I just think that, hey, look, they need to up their game as well as the coaches. Mm-hmm. Because, look, better teams, better coaches attract better players. We need better referees so they can advance if they want to go to the OHL, maybe the AHL, maybe university, maybe the NHL. Guys, before we close it out, we've got a couple minutes left. Tyler, I want to talk about, you've had the opportunity to coach some great young players. One guy that's with the St. Louis Blues, Alex Pietrangelo. Talk about some of the youngsters that you've had under your tutelage quickly.
Yeah, well, Pietrangelo is obviously one of them. He's a great kid. I did get a chance to stay in touch with him often. He always will send in product if we want to fundraise it off at our organization. He's first to come back. We're running an alumni golf tournament in the summer. He's like, oh, I'm in. I'm bringing a foursome, and I'm bringing Carlo and some of the Blues guys that live around Toronto. And a couple other kids that have coached, Cody Hodson, fantastic. Almost always comes in the summertime to help out with the kids around the case. Hey, is there any Canadiens teams going on? I'll jump on the ice with them. Like some of these kids, Stefan Dellaver, same sort of attitude. Just, you know what, they don't forget where they come from, and that's what you love. These kids sort of respect that, and they enjoy that. And when they come back, the kids just love it.
And you can tell, you're smiling talking about this young man and all the kids you've coached. And I very quickly, I think of Alex Pietrangelo in his first season with the Blues and that knucklehead Ryan Holwick. and it's my blue and white team, but that guy there, who I think is ever seen another NHL game after that year with the Leafs, goes and clocks Alex Pietrangelo, a guy.
He got him good. He got him good from behind. And Alex actually told me, he said what he learned from that was know who's on the ice. It was a good lesson for him to know some of these guys on the ice.
Yeah, but Tyler, that was unacceptable. I'm sorry. Alex Pietrangelo was a young kid, and someone from St. Louis, I can't remember, that someone needed to step up and take care of business at that point in time. That's why, and this is another discussion for another day, fighting still belongs for my money in the NHL. It's situations like that. Eric, before we let you go, what's happening? What's hot in your club right now? Is there a club that's going away at a big tournament?
Well, we have the Toronto Ice Dogs tournament coming up, American Thanksgiving. I'd also like to talk about what we're doing in Toronto Titans and the Ice Dogs. We've just brought on Ryan Barnes, who took over for Greg Ireland. Greg Ireland just got hired. He was on with us and doing a bunch of work in his spare time there when he was out of work, and he's on the Owen Sound Attack. And Ryan's taken over for Greg as our coaching mentor, coaching player development consultant. He was on the bench with me this afternoon, doing a great job, and we're looking forward to that. He's available to all our teams to go out there, help out the coaches, and be their mentor, and you know, help out that parent coach that needs some help, that is, you know, a keener that wants to help out, but maybe doesn't know the game, or maybe doesn't know how to run a practice, and that's what we're doing there.
Guys, well done, well said. Appreciate having you both here. You bring out a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of passion, but a lot of knowledge, and a lot of things that parents and coaches and referees want to hear. Tyler Craig, where can people get a hold of you very quickly if they want to get a hold of you?
905-625-7528 or torontojrcanadians.com.
Good luck and keep up the great work, Tyler. Eric, where can people get a hold of you?
TorontoTitans.ca or EC429 at rogers.com.
Keep up the great work, guys. You give back so much. Enjoy this season, and most importantly, keep those smiles for those young men. That was Tyler Craig of the Toronto Junior Canadians and Eric Chella of the Toronto Titans, guys that give back so much time and money out of their pocket to help out these young men. Keep up the great work.